You know, in today's world, it seems the best treatment is reserved only for a few. Well, Discover wants to change that by making everyone feel special. That's why with your Discover card, you have access to 24/7 live customer service as well as $0 fraud liability, which means you're never held responsible for unauthorized purchases. Finally, no matter who you are or where you are in life, you'll feel special with Discover. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard. Limitations apply.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Yeah, ready, ready.
Do you think enough kids these days know who Jerry Rice is?
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Jerry Rice, he had 118 catches in the playoffs. Travis Kelce just passed Rice. He's got 156.
Earlier on the show, host of the Greenlight Podcast and two-time Super Bowl champion, Chris Long. Coming up, ESPN SportsCenter host, Scott Van Pelt. Emmy Award-winning actor, Eric Stonestreet. USC head coach, Lincoln Riley. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Great to chat last hour with Chris Long on the 7-year anniversary of Chris Long winning his first Super Bowl ring when the Patriots came back down 28-3, and everybody on Twitter was saying it's time for Garoppolo. That literally happened.
Oh, yeah. Right through a pick literally six happened to open the second half, and it was 28-3.
And then, you know, things changed.
The early edition of the Globe, I think, had the Brady shot of him, like, on the ground looking at the Falcon player running for the touchdown.
And then they printed another edition.
Oh, yeah, they ran a late.
They updated?
The late edition.
They updated? Yeah, very good. Eric Stonestreet's going to join us top of hour number three. Apparently, he's got a story about him and L'Jarius Sneed that I can't wait to hear from him. That's what we call a tease. Mm. Yeah, I don't know if he jammed him at the line. And then Lincoln Riley in hour number three as well from Las Vegas. He's one of my favorites that I got a so thrilled chance to work with and be able to just say, hey, I know you worked all weekend long at the Pro Bowl and that you're flying home. And how'd you like to Zoom into the show for 20 minutes? And he says, yes. I think that was an appropriate description of our text conversations. Scott Van Pelt, good to see you.
There, roughly, but you know the answer is yes. Just tell me the question. I'm thrilled to be available, particularly on the Monday of Super Bowl week. As a guy that used to have a radio show, there's Monday guests.
Yes.
And then as the week goes on, you get to the Montana. Although I'm happy, Stonestreet, Long, like I feel like I'm in Lincoln Riley. I feel like what this tells me, Rich, is your Monday guest. This is the kind of A-list pull you've got. I'm not offended, thrilled always to be here with you.
You know me, Scott. Every Super Bowl day matters to me. You know what I'm saying? You have an A in Van, so that's your A list. You know what I mean?
Like,
there you go.
Bang.
I can
grading
see.
With a, not a very sharp pencil we're grading with to hand out that A.
Nice,
that's fine. We'll take it.
How was the Pro Bowl? What was that like? It looked fun.
That's the key word. I think what the NFL has done is they've threaded the needle here with all-star games in most sports, like the NBA, like, I don't know what it is, but it's really not basketball per se. You reached the point where you couldn't play football any longer because guys weren't going to put themselves in harm's way, nor should they. And I think what they've managed to do is take the fact that guys are still competitive, create these sort of fun guys, men of a certain age, women of a certain age, Rich, you'll remember Howard Cosell in the Battle of the Network Stars, right?
Hey,
Gabe Kaplan sprinting against somebody. I mean, we were bored.
Yes,
we
I know.
Were bored back then.
I will never, Scott, I will never forget the day in my life I watched Adrian Barbeau in a tug of war. Scott,
that's living.
I'll never forget it in my entire life. And people should Google it and understand where I'm going with it. That's all I'm saying.
You were a younger man, and it made you feel things. Certain things, but you felt
alive.
Things.
I felt alive.
That's what it is. But they take the fun of that tug of wars and obstacle courses and whatnot.
Yes.
And then you still end up with an on-field football component. And the Manning brothers component is also fun because there's real. I mean, they're great at kind of playing up the rivalry, but there's some real brotherly.
Yeah.
I want to beat you just because we're keeping score, and it was fun. I mean, being there for practice Saturday is great. Just to to ask honest questions of guys. Like Aiden Hutchinson was awesome. I said, can you have fun? And he was looking around and he goes, you know what? It felt like a second ago that we had this big lead against San Francisco and I wasn't going to come. And then I thought, you know what? Everyone here either didn't make the playoffs or they lost also. And I said, well, good for you for allowing yourself to come here and receive the accolades that you have earned. And the weekend was fun. The game's fun. And it comes down to a play in the end. And I as I say, I think they've done the best that you can do with a game that was once something else and turning it into something else. The word these days is reimagined. I think they've reimagined it well.
Yeah, and I was riveted by Justin Tucker and Brandon Aubrey playing tic-tac-toe by kicking field goals. I'm not kidding. And on a scale of one to completely incorrigible, how is Orlovsky after he performed better than every Pro Bowl quarterback in the accuracy games, Scott?
It was one of I failed him as I failed him because we had that in our back pocket. And at some point I was like, we got to show that Orlovsky was the best in all of this. And then we didn't, they certainly got their money's worth leading up to the telecast. Yeah. On the broadcast, we should have done that. We failed him, but he absolutely would have been peacocking around and should have been because good reminder folks that you want to make fun of Dan Orlovsky because he ran out of the back of the end zone. Okay. I get it. He made it to the NFL as a quarterback, and he could spin it, as the kids say, and he did in that little competition. He showed he could still throw it.
Damn, that is so cool. Scott Van Pelt here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, so what are your thoughts on Super Bowl 58, and it will come down to what, do you believe, Scott?
Kansas City's defense. And that's the thing that will be the least talked about. Because we aren't good at it. And I mean, all of us, when we were doing countdown the day that Baltimore was playing Houston, I made the point of calling ourselves out. I said, well, we're an hour and 45 minutes in and we're going to actually reference Baltimore's defense. How about it? I mean, they led the NFL in points allowed and most sacks and most takeaways, but we were going to talk about Lamar and Stroud for good reason. Then the following week, you're going to talk about Patrick and Lamar for good reason. Mm. But who were those teams in that game? One and two scoring defenses in the National Football League. Kansas City's defense is the reason they were able to get through the rough patches this season. And I think San Francisco is equipped with a bunch of different weapons. We'll talk all week about Purdy because we're incapable of talking about him in anything other than he's either Joe Montana or he sucks. Because that's just what things, every conversation comes down to, either you're the best or you're garbage. But ultimately, he has all these different weapons at his disposal, and that Kansas City defense has been not good, but great. So to me, Mahomes is going to do Mahomes stuff. You're never going to stop him from doing that. But can San Francisco do enough against that Kansas City defense that they can win the game? That, I believe, will be the most substantial decider of the outcome of the game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and let's dig into the Purdy conversation, as you just referenced. Not much nuance when it comes to the Brock Purdy conversation. And you know, bottom line is he is one of the youngest starters in the history of the Super Bowl. He is still clearly cutting his teeth and learning. And last year he was the darling, like Mr. Irrelevant is the most relevant player potentially in the National Football League. Isn't this interesting? And then obviously we saw how it ended due to injury. Then he comes back, and this is a type of surgery that somebody might lose a few miles per hour off his fastball if we're talking about Major League Baseball here. He comes back. They trade away Trey Lance. Now all of a sudden the fact that the team's all in on him places the pressure, as we like to call it in our world, on him. And changes, I think, the conversation. Honestly, I've spent so much time trying to figure out what goes through our brains collectively as a sports media here. But is that the difference here, where we're talking about Purdy as opposed to last year, Scott?
Maybe. I think it's just the worst part of our human nature, or what we are at the moment, is that we love you until we get sick of you, and then when we turn on you, then you know it's. Good luck, right? I mean, and I don't know what he's done to other than have it turn into on our network and any network where there's conversation about what you are And then, you know, Cam has had his conversation about, you know, the game manager piece. And listen, I defer to a guy who's been an MVP and played in the Super Bowl. Like, his opinion has merit. Right? I feel like he actually has nuanced conversation if you're listening to it, other than just getting mad about, well, what did he say? And I put on the tape. That's what they always say in football, right? You've made your living for many years with the NFL Network. Mm-hmm. When it comes to football, what are these guys that if I've learned anything being around him, it's like, what's the tape show you? And Purdy put some pretty good stuff on tape, game, often game after game. And then, you know, they got beat by Baltimore and he turned it over some. And then he's like, well, that's it. He sucks. I mean, I don't think that's fair, but we're so often not fair. We're so often not reasonable. We're going to take the most recent thing and turn it into what you are as a player. So if he wins, if they win,
yes,
then that means he gets to be a guy, right? And if they don't, does that mean it's his fault? Now, if they lose because he plays poorly, and he did play poorly against Baltimore, I'm not saying he didn't, but a lot of people played poorly. Goff was horrible against Baltimore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Detroit went in there and got destroyed. Worst game they played all year. Who was it against? Oh, that was Baltimore. I'll be damned. Like, they were hard to play against. Kansas City didn't get a point in the second half against Baltimore. Didn't need to, but my point is a lot of people look bad against Baltimore. So I would hope that people allow the performance to speak for itself in terms of where the conversation goes from here. I just have very little faith that that'll happen, because it's like there's no he's either an MVP candidate or he's garbage, right? Like, can he just be a good starter, like on a really good team? Is that okay?
But he's also an MVP candidate. I mean, he's one of the finalists. And again,
why'd that happen?
You know,
why'd that happen though?
Because he performed well enough. I don't know.
And in my opinion, sure. And I think it took Mahomes is Mahomes. Mahomes is in this other category on his own. To me, on the tiers, like, he deserves to be discussed in a certain way.
Yeah.
And they weren't great. That offense wasn't great. And they were scuffling along. Rich, they lost at home on Christmas Day to the Raiders. And we're going, what are we doing, man? Like, that wasn't Halloween or Thanksgiving. That was Christmas that happened. And so because we got that deep into the season where you didn't have a guy whose numbers just said, I'm the MVP, right? You were looking for, well, who do we have? Well, I don't know. Lamar's numbers aren't awesome, but he's pretty good. Well, San Francisco's great, and he's been pretty good. So it became who's the best player on the best team, which is why I think his name was thrown around in there. I don't necessarily feel like his numbers scream, I'm the MVP. I just feel like he was the quarterback of the best team and the one seed in the NFC. So by default, you end up there. But then it gets picked apart for all these other reasons. So I don't know. It's what we do, man.
No, I know. And then I guess I don't know if it matters in the end, because nobody's sitting here parsing through Tom Brady's first career playoff season right now. Because if you remember, I mean – Raiders fans, where we're going to a lot of Raiders fans, would basically be saying, well, they got lucky with an interpretation of the rule that was correct in the snow. He also then got hurt, right? And Bledsoe had to come in there. And we all forget that Super Bowl week leading up to that game against the Rams, Belichick was asked, are you going to put Bledsoe in there after everything anyway? I mean, that was what Brady, and then, you know, in the final Summer All Madden broadcast, the two of them together on Fox, Madden's like, I don't know if you're going to really put the ball in this kid's hand, just play for overtime. And they didn't, you know what I mean? Like, and so, right. So in many ways, I mean, Purdy has a similar sort of conversation around him. Like, is he really the guy? I mean, you got somebody like Bledsoe that was at least there in New England. Here, I guess what you sent Lance away, you send Garoppolo away. I don't know if there's a sense of Purdy doesn't deserve what's happening here, even though last year we were all marveling about what he was able to do. It's really weird, man, you know?
But I think, and I said this in the summer when they traded Lance away, and there were people that were aghast that they had done this. And I said, they're telling you what they organizationally, what they think.
Yeah.
We've got our guy. This is him. Purdy's our guy. And that was before they knew or we knew, or if even he knew, was like, my arm going to be good enough for me to be some version of what I was last year? And then the answer, I think, was yeah. So they've told you at every step, He's our guy. And so I look, man, this is as big a stage as there is in sport. And so it'll be difficult to either not succeed or fail spectacularly because of that. One way or another, a week from today, that your conversation, all of our conversation, has to be framed with either, well, now he's on this different trajectory, or he's Garoppolo part two, right? I mean, we don't do nuance well, unfortunately. You can, you just have to be willing to do it. Yeah, just say, well, it's maybe not this. It's maybe not he's Joe Montana or he sucks. It's okay for it to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I guess, or it could be a shootout, right? I don't know. That's
last year
that's
was
the beauty of it.
You know,
I know, right? Exactly.
Last year absolutely was.
Hey, listen, Hurts came out of that game last year as he's worth every penny the Eagles are going to have to pay him, and
he was the best quarterback on the field for much of that game.
Correct.
Didn't throw a pick six, but at the end of it, they lost. So then he played well enough so that at the end of it, even though they lost, it wasn't like, well, they lost because Hurts wasn't good enough.
Correct.
That wasn't what happened. In the end, everyone's kind of mad about a Bradbury call, even though Bradbury's like, yeah, maybe, you know, I got him.
Mm.
So, listen, to me, you ask me, what does it come down to? To me, it's Kansas City's defense they're the biggest thing that is interesting to me. And San Francisco's defense, which for quite a while had a rep for being, like, pretty rugged, they got eaten alive by both the Packers and the Lions. You know, they better be better against Mahomes, or none of this conversation about Purdy is going to matter at all.
Scott Van Pelt, couple minutes left with the SportsCenter anchor deluxe right here on the Rich Eisen Show. So, you know, as you know, Monday guests are not allowed to say, I've got five more days or whatever you might utilize here. I know you've got your own show. This is content in the 21st century, me asking you who you've got, but I would like an answer. Who are you going to take in this game?
All right, I'll try to be brief.
No.
As I've just displayed, that's not
do
my
what
strength.
You wish. No, dude, go
it
for it.
It never has been.
Right.
Fundamentally, as a ball knower, as they say, right? If you watch the game and you think you understand the game, I just don't understand how Mahomes is an underdog in this game.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Makes no sense to me. And I think when he's an underdog, and I was the guy screaming, I just want to see him go on the road, not because I don't think they can win. I just want to see it. Well, how about Buffalo and Baltimore? Any other questions? You bald dope. They've answered that question. And now they're dogs again. And I don't understand why. And so I think in my head, well, Kansas City's going to win this game. And then fortunately or unfortunately, the venue for this game is a place through a prism I tend to see things, and that's the Vegas side of things.
Mm-hmm.
It feels to me like the line at the window to say, give me the Chiefs, is a mile long, and that is a data point that I often consider because they're not in the business. Those lights aren't bright because every dope can show up and just go, give me the Chiefs because it's free. That's not how it works. So I'm convinced that by the time we get to the end of this week, I'm going to say San Francisco and shrug just because I can't understand how Kansas City is just this obvious because things like this rarely are.
Right.
So I'm going to talk myself into San Francisco, Rich, and I don't know why. If you ask me the fundamental football reasons, I'm not going to have one.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
So no, it does. So we're putting you down for San Francisco.
Put me down. Put an SF next to me.
Put an SF.
And I hate it. I hate that I said it on the record.
SVP.
Score, Scott?
SF.
You got to score?
You got to score?
What's the total? Because I want to make it as vague as I can for the total.
47 and a hook.
It feels lower than that to me.
Same.
Give me the Niners 24-20.
24-20. All right.
We're on the lower side and we're on the favorite. God, what am I doing? Who am I talking? Don't put this on the record. Don't send this to anyone.
That's kind of too
late.
Yeah. For that.
Yeah. Everybody good out there? All you and all your crew?
We're good, man.
Yeah, right?
We're good. It's raining.
Lots of rain.
It's raining. I can't wait.
Is that all it is? No, it seems like
it's pouring. It's pouring.
Trees, man.
It's pouring. I can't wait to get Lincoln Riley on. As you know, he's coming in hour three. He must be just like looking around at all these new neighbors of his complaining about the rain. He must be like, "What the hell's? Where the hell did I land here in Los Angeles?" But that's the way.
I've seen where he landed. It's a pretty good spot. He's doing all right.
Not doing bad. Not doing poorly. By the way, I don't know if you heard. I gave you a shout out at the end of the Patriots Broncos game with the pitchy woo woo.
I from the bottom of my heart, I thank you. And in the very first sequence of plays in the Pro Bowl, the AFC started chucking around, and I'm literally, I've never called a game in my life, and I start screaming, pitchy, pitchy, woo, woo.
It's great. By the way, it's the perfect description for it. There's no other way to put it.
Because it doesn't work, although in a Pro Bowl game, it works a lot better because it never ends up in the hands of some poor guard who has to try to make a move and a decision.
Well, that is now the new ceiling of Pro Bowl coverage or this type of entertainment coverage. The floor, as we all know, was the post-tire race chat between Howard Cosell and Telly Savalas years ago. You know, the sack race with Robert Conrad. But I could go on and on. It's like one big Mad Lib. I love that you mentioned that, Scott.
Ed Asner, arm wrestling with
he played football.
Vic Tayback. Is that the guy from Alice? Did I hit you with a Vic Tayback? Yeah.
The big dinghy. Yes, correct. Vic Tayback.
All the old heads are smiling. All the youngsters are like, what happened? What are these? Tell these two guys to shut up. Get Vic Pelt out of here.
Why are they not talking about SZA? Thanks again, Scott. Really appreciate it.
All right. Always a pleasure. Dude, see you in Vegas.
You're right back at you. The great Scott Van Pelt. Here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Vic Tayback died 34 years ago.
Oh, dude. Vic Tayback. He was Mel of Mel's Diner.
Yeah.
Come on now. Please.
Stifle it.
And by the way, we look at things differently here. I totally understand what he's saying. You know, hey, Monday of Super Bowl week, you just got to get who you can. You know what I mean? Because everybody waits till the end of the week and suddenly Pro Bowlers show up and Hall of Famers show up. And we do have a, you know, rule that we try to stick to, rings and jackets. That's what we want. We want rings and jackets.
Rings and jackets. Mm-hmm.
But this man wears a jacket. You know, he's got rings. Scott Van Pelt.
Love it.
The magical SVP. All right. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We've got your phone calls. I've got a top five list.
Hey. Ooh. I like a Monday top five.
Where top five mind-blowing results of Super Bowl 58, what they would be. What would be the top five most mind-blowing results?
We're looking into the future.
Oh, yeah. Should I get the crystal ball for this?
Absolutely.
We're going to do this next?
Do we need help picking
it
up?
Let's do this next. Let's do it next.
Where is the crystal ball?
Oh, it's over there. Oh, okay. I'll get it. Right. We'll be right back on the Rich Eisen Show.
On the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, co-host David Green and Rob Abasolo interview real estate investors and entrepreneurs about successes, failures, and hard-earned lessons. Joined by author Dave Meyer.
Who wrote a book?
I did write a book.
It seems like you're coming out with a book every 4 minutes.
You're one to talk. You've released 2 books this year. I've done half as many as you.
It is more about strategy than it is about just finding whatever the new buzzword happens to be.
Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning. Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather. Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
In New York, I'm Sue Aller.
I'm Charles Tillotesma.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
I'm Jennifer King.
I'm Clayton Neville.
I'm Kevin Carr.
I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
When you're running the ball downhill, Debo, do you see people making business decisions? Is it something you're seeing as you're running downhill, Debo?
I mean, honestly, I really don't pay attention. I mean, if they move out the way, they move out the way. If they don't, you know, they just don't feel it.
But you could see it though, right? Come on now. You could see the eyes maybe getting wide, and you could see them maybe getting down a little lower than, you know, they're trying to get some leverage here.
Most people kind of turn it down, but some people out there just make business decisions and just kind of throw their bodies just hoping I fall down too.
Well, I mean, that's not really happening. I'm not seeing that. Do you like the contact? Do you enjoy it?
Of course. So growing up, I played mostly like running back until I kind of got to college, and then I transitioned to a wideout.
So what do you like to do if you're given a choice? Run it or catch it and run it? What's your favorite to do?
I'd rather catch it than run it.
Why is that?
Because if I catch it, I got way more space, you know. I mean, it's really not a preference, but I preferably like to catch it and run.
Okay, and you got a good story about Shanahan showing you a play, and you're like, oh, okay, that's going to work. And then it does. You got one of those?
Sir, I do not remember any of them.
None of them? Because normally we've seen that, where he just says, this is going to work. We're going to get a touchdown. Didn't he do that with Kittle once? He says, this one's going to go to the house, and then it goes to the house.
Kyle, I mean, if you watch him, And like, he's always down. Like, if we on offense, he always down on the other side just watching. And you can see him sometimes talking to the referee.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, now watch Kittle. This guy's about to hold. And 9 times out of 10, he holds, and then we get the flag. But a lot of plays that he calls, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. Any play that Kyle calls can end up being a touchdown.
That was Debo calling in, and then that was a big to-do about his upcoming contract, about whether to run it or not. Debo. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Great chat with Scott Van Pelt. Derek in Missouri has been hanging on since we came on the air. What's up, Derek?
Hey, Rich. How you doing today?
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a top five list myself. Oh. It's my top five favorite Super Bowls of my lifetime.
All right. How old are you, Derek?
I am 35.
He's 35. All right. So we're limited. There's 58 Super Bowls. Are you including ones that you don't even remember?
No, sir.
Okay. Do you need some sort of setup? You want music? What do you want?
I would love some NFL Films music.
There you go. Please, Derek in Missouri, top five Super Bowls of his lifetime. He's 35, or as they might say, XXXV years old. What's up, Derek? What do you have?
All right, so number five. This one, to me, doesn't seem like that doesn't get included a lot. And I would say out of the top 10 top Super Bowls for Tom Brady, it was probably his most competitive because it came down to the last who had the ball, the last possession.
Uh-huh.
And it came down to an Adam Vinatieri field goal for a second Super Bowl win in Super Bowl 38 against the Carolina Panthers.
That was the first one I ever covered.
Fun game.
Okay, that's number five. Right. What's number four, Derek?
Number four, Brockman. Sorry, I hate to bring this up to you, but it's kind of taken the Patriots, you know, the entire defense to chase Eli Manning to track him down and to heave that ball up in the air for David Tyree to catch that ball on his helmet.
Yep.
And Ronnie Harrison till this very day is probably thinking, what could I have done differently to make the play happen to where he didn't catch that ball? It was Super Bowl 42.
One of my favorite moments, Derek, in the history of this show is when Brockman once told Eli Manning there was holding on that play, and he's like, holding? They didn't block anybody. That was one of my favorite moments in maybe the history of this program. And by the way, Rodney Harrison's consolation prize, if you will, may be hearing his name go into the Hall of Fame on Thursday night. That's entirely possible. Okay, what's number three on your list, Derek? Let's bring it home. What do you have?
Number three, so it could have taken James Harrison 5 football fields to take it all the way to the end zone for that miraculous pick 6 towards the end of the first half. And, of course, San Antonio Holmes with the miraculous ballerina-like type, keeping the toes in the end zone for the touchdown the Steelers winning Super Bowl 43 against Kurt Warner and the Cardinals.
It's a good thing Kurt's not here. He's on Thursday show. You got two more, Derek?
Super Bowl 49. You know, for me, I don't know why, but this one just, even though I picked Seattle, this one just stands up there just because.
The Malcolm Butler play, sure.
Absolutely.
And number one on your list?
And for me, as a Bronco fan, I was 9 years old. People say, Derek, you're too young to remember that day. It's like, no, I remember that day like it was back in my head when I saw John Elway in that helicopter run towards the end of the game to pull off one of the most miraculous upset Super Bowl history, and where Pat Bowlen was on top of that stage saying there's only 4 words. This one's for John, for the Broncos to beat the Packers in Super Bowl 32.
This one's
my top five favorite Super Bowls of my lifetime.
You just made the list!
Thank you, Derek. This one's for Derek. We're clapping. All right.
Good list.
I mean... That one was for Derek, literally the final one. I don't think anybody would choose that Super Bowl as the best Super Bowl of all time. But if he's 9 years old, he remembers it. He's a Bronco fan. There you have it. Thank you for calling, Derek. Appreciate that.
I don't know. I mean, Derek had 8 chances to put a Cowboys game in this list, and he didn't. So.
Well, he's only 35.
I mean, we still
he doesn't
have
remember him.
You know? Packers, he did say he had to be
Packers
alive.
Were 11-point favorites in that game. Denver wins by 7.
Yeah, I know.
One of the biggest upsets ever.
In San Diego.
Correct.
Right? It was in TD's hometown.
Qualcomm. Correct.
I don't think it was Qualcomm yet. It might have still been Jack Murphy. back in the day. I don't know. But at any rate, I've got my own top five.
Ooh.
Now, what's my favorite coaching cliche? I don't have a crystal ball. I mean, it's such a cop-out. Of course you don't have a crystal ball. Who the hell has a crystal ball?
Unless.
So we always say that over and over and over again. Who the hell has a crystal ball? So one day I come to work, as you know, yeah. and I'm like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to buy a crystal ball. And I kept taking a look at, you know, out there online, and they all look small. And I decided, you know what? If we're going to get a crystal ball, we're going to get one that looks like U2 is playing in the middle of it. I mean, this thing is huge. Oh, my God. This has to be like 30 pounds or something like that.
You just hurt TJ's back.
It is huge.
It's so good, though. The way the light reflects, it's awesome.
I know. It is gorgeous.
It's great.
It does look like yesterday was the anniversary, 17th anniversary of Prince playing in the,
in the rain.
It does look like a very similar sort of... It's set up. Look at the
reflection.
What did Don Mischa call the producer? Hexagonal lighting. It's beautiful.
We want it to rain harder.
So I decided bust out the crystal ball for my top five. The top five would be mind blowing results of Super Bowl 58. Hit it.
High five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Rich's top five.
All right, here we go. There's a little bit of something in it for everybody. There's two, you know, downers for each team, one for each team, and then there's two exciting ones for each team. And then this one might be a downer for whoever bets the over. Because number five, mind-blowing result, of Super Bowl 58 is the defense dominates. That would be kind of mind-blowing if it's, I mean, I'm not like 13-3 Patriots over Rams, but what if it is something where both offenses struggle and the defenses, we're talking about Nick Bosa being a defensive player of the year candidate. Nick Bosa, defensive player of the year winner. As a matter of fact, the Niners win. Bosa would become the eighth player in NFL history to win defensive rookie of the year, defensive player of the year, and a Super Bowl in his career. The other ones are Dana Stubblefield, Terrell Suggs, Aaron Donald, Joe Green, Jack Lambert, Lawrence Taylor, and Charles Woodson.
Wow.
So you got a defensive player of the year guy out there, and Chris Jones is a defensive stallion as well. Although, how about this? This one kind of stopped me in the NFL Network research packet. Chris Jones, this will be his fourth Super Bowl appearance. He was in Super Bowl 54, 55, and last year as well. Okay. You ready for this one? In his three Super Bowl appearances, zero sacks, zero tackles for loss, zero quarterback hits. Zeros across the board.
Interesting.
So his first sack, tackle for loss, or quarterback hit will be the first in his fourth Super Bowl appearance.
Whoa.
So he's due, right? And we talk about this Niners defense. What can they do? The Chiefs, by the way, led the NFL with 63 sacks this year, including playoffs. This is the first time they've hit the Super Bowl in the Mahomes era in which they had more sacks than their opponent. By the way, they had 62 sacks last year. The Eagles just came in with 78. So the defense might dominate this one. Who knows? That would be mind-blowing. Number four on this list would be if the 49ers fall down early again. Really? Now, how would that be mind-blowing? I just consider it that they just got to they've got to come out fast. They've got to come out with that first 15 scripted being something else, because if they don't, that would be pretty damn significant. They've got a minus 16 point differential in the first half in this postseason. Only the Cowboys had a worse point differential in the postseason this year when they lost by 20 in the wild card round. They're the seventh team all time to make a Super Bowl appearance with a negative 7 or worse forced first half point differential leading up to a Super Bowl appearance. The prior six teams all lost in the Super Bowl. So if they want to win it, they can't fall down early again. That would be kind of mind-blowing. So that's the negative one for the 49ers. Here would be the negative one for the Chiefs. Number three on the list of mind-blowing results of Super Bowl 58 is if the Chiefs' case of the dropsies return. What would happen then? First half, ball bounces off of somebody's hands. What if one bounces off of somebody's hands for an interception and all of a sudden Niners are up and the Chiefs' dropsies returns? What if that happens? Yeah. I don't mean to put this stuff about the Niners and the Chiefs into the universe, but that would be kind of mind-blowing because it's been totally reversed. They have flipped the switch. We have not seen it at all. The last three playoff games, right? We didn't see it in the final week of the season. They rested everybody. And really, the last time we saw anything that looked significantly negative overall was the Christmas loss to the Raiders. What if that happened? That's number three on the list. Now, let's see glasses half full here. Number two, I'm looking into my crystal ball, and I see the number two mind-blowing result of Super Bowl 58 is if Patrick Mahomes utterly dismantles the 49ers defense. Just smokes him. Just an old-school Elway beating the crap out of, you know, Atlanta, right? An old-school Dallas beating the crap out of Buffalo. An old-school just quarterback goes in and eviscerates and just exclamation points this whole conversation we're going to have all week about his ascending greatness. And as I've been talking about, air of invincibility. What if the Niners come in and they just can't get a pass rush and they can't stop Pacheco and then Mahomes just eviscerates them? That's number two. Oh, man. Would be a mind-blowing result. Number one, I think this is everyone in agreement as I look into my crystal ball. Thank you very much. I should make my hand movement over here. I look in there, and this is the ultimate dream for 49er fans. The most mind-blowing result of Super Bowl 58 would be Super Bowl MVP Brock Purdy plays the game of his life. Shows up, three touchdowns, 300 yards, passer rating damn near perfect. Every single drop back looks like he's in a rocking chair, and he is just playing. The game slows down for him. And then he's the one who takes off and picks up first downs with his legs and doesn't make a mistake. The ball doesn't get thrown near a defender, let alone directly to one, as happened in the win over Green Bay and the one that did actually cost him, got picked off against the Lions in the win in the NFC Championship game. Brock Purdy shows up. Everybody's talking about, is he the right guy? And he has a night in Las Vegas better than most people have ever had in Las Vegas. And I understand what I'm saying there. And whatever happens there actually disseminates around the entire world. And the Niners finally get that Super Bowl win they have not seen since Steve Young destroyed San Diego. That's the most mind-blowing result, I think, of what Super Bowl 58 would be.
You think we need one more?
All right.
All right, we'll do one more.
I'm going to go dive headfirst into this thing here. And I look into my crystal ball. And I see in my crystal ball, when it's all over, the confetti on the ground, and the confetti is the color of red, and somebody takes that confetti and shoves it away so one guy in red can take a knee.
Oh, God.
And bust out a ring.
Oh, my God.
And hand it to Taylor Swift.
Brilliant!
That Travis Kelce, amongst the confetti, does in fact propose to Taylor Swift.
That would be so nuts.
The internet would be broken. The entire world might stop spinning. What if that actually happens? No pressure here at all. Seems like they're just two lovely kids living their best lives. One has a fourth Grammy for the album of the year, and Travis Kelce would have a third ring of his life. And then the fourth one he would hand to Taylor Swift, making Tony Romo's joke actually come into he calls a joke. Do we believe Tony Romo referred to
he's done it several times this year.
As his wife?
Well, no, he referred to Jason as the
brother-in-law, whatever. Okay, yeah. At any rate.
Yeah.
That would be pretty mind-blowing.
That would be pretty
I actually went there.
Would it be mind-blowing at this point?
Yes, it would. Yeah, it would be.
No, it would.
If he actually does that.
I don't think so. Brockman predicted this a month and a half ago.
I was kind of kidding. She doesn't even follow Travis on Twitter. So
there you go.
You know what I mean?
Right, okay.
Guys, that changes everything.
I'm sure she's handling the account.
Rich, I've skipped the last few pages of the script just so I don't know if that comes to fruition or not. wanted to take
Are you bringing that to Vegas? Because our first guest of the entire week in Vegas is Keegan-Michael Key, the star of that commercial.
Sure our scripts match up.
Okay.
You know.
Very good. That's my top five list right there.
I like it. I like it.
Did I miss anything? I couldn't think of anything more mind-blowing. I took one that's negative for each team and one that's positive for each team, mm-hmm. and then I took one that would just be in terms of the result. Because everybody thinks that I think that the offenses will have moments in this game.
I think it would be insanely mind-blowing if Mahomes just stunk.
Yeah, I can't.
Like, if he was just like what? Had a bad game, three picks, less than 200 yards, I think that would be absolutely insane.
Maybe you could have added something weird going on, like the lights go out again, or a guy paraglides onto the field, like the Holyfield bow fight. Just something strange like that happening during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back here on the Rich Eisen Show, an announcement that I'm very excited about for Run Rich Run.
Hey.
And we'll talk about what we can all do to help out. That's next. This is the Rich Eisen Show. All right, back here on the show, we're going to be joined shortly by a special guest to help us kick off the charitable portion of our season for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. I've already, as you could tell, kicked off the training portion of my year.
Yeah, it's 6 a.m. workouts. Look at you.
I did a 6 a.m. workout today. I'm happy to say I'm heading off to the Super Bowl for the first time. Sub 200 pounds. I don't remember the last time I've done that. So we'll see if that translates to being faster. Here's the issue as well. As you know, I'm not running till April.
Right.
Normally the run is at the combine.
Right.
But now we're, this is the third straight year we're going to run at the Rose Bowl. That'll be fun. Certainly since... Michigan men do very well there. So we just saw that. Should I get somebody there from Alabama and retire them? Is there anybody? Or is that just that's a negative? Is it disrespectful?
I mean, it would be nice to have them just, as an olive branch, maybe, to extend it and let them know there's no hard feelings.
Yeah, right. Reach out to Saban and he'll just tell me, quit asking.
Your favorite player ever
is from Bama.
Is from Bama.
Joe Namath?
Yeah.
Joe Willie.
I could retire him again.
You think he still likes you after all this?
Of course.
I don't know.
I'm probably going to see it. Joe's almost always at the NFL Honors. If I see him,
yeah,
take a picture with him.
Okay.
He might just roll his eyes at you and walk away.
Okay.
So, all right, we're back here on the Rich Eisen Show, right here on the Roku channel. Our radio audience is set to return. In hour three, we've got Eric Stone Street and Lincoln Riley coming up in hour number three. Back on the Rich Eisen Show here on the Roku channel, as we all know, along with the Rich Eisen Show radio network. As everybody knows, I think by now, I run for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital this upcoming April. Will be my 20th run. Can you believe that?
20.
20.
Wow.
And I keep doing it even though I get slower pretty much every damn time because it's such a great cause. And also, Kevin Burkhardt is on tomorrow's program. He is the host of the 19th Legends for Charity Dinner, which is a premier event during Super Bowl weeks, raised over $11 million over its life thanks to the great work of everybody behind that evening. Cheryl D. Leonardis is an angel on the planet Earth for running that organization. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, it's been happening for them since 2006. And Tony Romo is the recipient of this year's Pat Summerall Award, which I was honored to have received a few years ago. At any rate, it's time to talk about St. Jude a little bit here and try and raise a little bit of money. The president and CEO of ALSAC, which is the fundraising and awareness organization for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. My friend Rick Shadyac back here on the show right here on the Monday before the Super Bowl. Good to see you, Richard. How are you?
I am well, Rich. Good to see you. And I heard you say sub 200 pounds.
Yes.
Impressive getting to the Super Bowl.
Okay. The desk hides the sveltness.
I got you.
Well, the most important thing is that if I've got you, and I want to make sure as many people do that, because I spoke to a young lad, an interview that will run on NFL Network on Sunday, part of our 8.5 hours of coverage, a kid named Sydney in the Carolinas who went to St. Jude at age 8. His parents got the most nightmarish diagnosis that you can get. And he's, Rick, as soon as we were done with the interview, I get misty talking about it. He went out, played basketball. He was playing, he can't wait to play more football. Couldn't have struck me as, like, I would have never known that he had this nightmarish thing happen to him. And St. Jude getting him back on his feet. It's beautiful, Rick. It really is.
That's what it's all about. And that's why you do the Run Rich Run and you've raised over $5.6 million. It's about allowing these kids the opportunity to live out their lives' dreams and to be kids again, right? And that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to play sports again. So I can't wait to see that interview. And you know who is going to be speaking at the Legends for Charity dinner is Emmanuel, who I think ran in your Run Rich Run 40-yard dash last year.
Yeah, he ran sub 5. He plays football, right? So I mean, like, and he's built like a brick house, Rick. And yeah. He looked as healthy as ever. And I just love seeing the look on these parents' faces and the kids' faces when they do this run, because it's just a beautiful day in the life where you get to be kids and run. So what can you tell us about the latest from St. Jude? And the research hospital and what's being affected there in 2024.
You know, we're in the middle right now of our $12.9 billion strategic plan. We just opened up a brand new patient housing facility called the Domino's Village, 141 two- and three-bedroom apartments for our patients and their families. It's literally right across the street from St. Jude, connected right into our campus. We've opened up a patient family commons, a non-clinical area where our families can spend time in between treatments. And I'll tell you what I'm really excited about, Rich, that is that this year, we're going to start our distribution of free cancer medications as part of an initiative to raise the survival rates around the globe from 20% to 60%. So we're going to be giving free cancer medications over the next 5 years to 120,000 children of the 400 cases of childhood cancer around the globe. And that's why you run. That's why people come to Legends for Charity, so we can pay those monies to make sure kids all around the globe get a chance to live full and complete lives, and also to ensure that no family ever receives a bill from St. Jude, not for treatment, travel, housing, or food, so mom and dad can focus on helping their child survive.
And that's a beautiful part about it, and that's why folks might sit here and go, well, they understand the part about cancer research and making sure that something that is insanely expensive is disseminated and dispensed for $0 and 0 cents. That makes sense about a children's research hospital. But you're mentioning about housing, right? I mean, like, it's because people just get this. I mean, it all starts the same too, Rick. When you hear the stories, it's just like, kid has a sore throat. Kid's leg suddenly just starts to hurt, you know, an arm pain. And then you go to the doctor and you're like, what is my child suffering from? And then they have to uproot and change their entire lifestyle. And that's again why, you know, what you're doing is really terrific.
Right. No, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, a lot of kids go to emergency rooms at local children's hospitals, amazing institutions all around the country, and then, God willing, they're discharged or they're discharged after a short stay in the hospital. Sometimes it can be worse than that, no question. But here at St. Jude, our kids come from all across the United States and the world, and they're with us for months and years on end. So we've got to provide an opportunity for them to still be family and to allow them safe space, you know, space where they can just be a family together. And that's why we build these housing facilities. This will be the fourth one that we now have. And this was our biggest one. And we're super excited. The families are loving it. It was brought to our by our great friends at Domino's Pizza. Mm. And it's a magnificent facility.
Rick, thanks for the time. Greatly appreciate it. StJude.org is still the spot where people can donate at the moment. And obviously there's the run. I'll be coming back asking for more money later on in the spring, but that's where people can go.
That's correct. StJude.org. That's STJUDE.org. And thank you, Rich. And support Run Rich Run, man. He's $5.6 million. I see some big milestones on the horizon there.
The key is just to run less than 5.6 and more than 5.6 when we actually get some cash. You know what I'm saying?
I'll bet on you, Rich. You'll do it.
You're the best. And again, the Legends for Charity Dinner in honor of Tony Romo coming up on Thursday night. Kevin Burkhardt, we'll talk more about it with him in studio tomorrow. You be well, Rick. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Rich. You too.
You got it. That's Rick Shadyac, the president and CEO of ALSAC, which is the awareness and fundraising organization in support of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Again, I spoke to that kid the other day after our show Friday. I'm like, you know, what was your favorite part of the day? Yeah, we played, you know, it was a blacktop. We went up to the blacktop and shot hoops. He spent 2.5 months in St. Jude as an 8-year-old. Oh. You know? Hour number three coming up. Eric Stone Street. He knows all about in support of children's hospitals. He's coming up hour three. Talking Chiefs and Lincoln Riley. Lincoln was supposed to be in Vegas. I'm seeing him on a media tour. He's here in Los Angeles. You know why? A rain.
Can't get out.
I'm telling you. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope we can get out tomorrow, right?
I was only thinking that when I was driving in today, because, you know, I drive in behind the airport and just watching the rain just pour. I didn't see any planes in the kind of like the 3-4 minutes I was back there to take off. And I usually see about 3 or 4 in that drive. So
are you saying you drive behind the airport and sometimes stop and watch the planes? Is that what you just said?
No, I mean, that stretch of road, I'm right behind it. So I see planes every morning flying over, and I didn't see anything.
Okay. Hey, how's the weather out there?
It's raining sideways.
All right, we're taking off tomorrow early afternoon.
It's raining sideways!
Yeah, like a 30% chance.
All right, we're good.
We should be okay.
Meanwhile, Del Tufo's, you know, got the blinkers on somewhere.
I'm going to call him.
In the high desert.
I was just going to say,
Don't call him. Don't call him.
Why? I got to know because how he's doing.
We got to get him hands-free and they're safe, the okay?
You know he's hands-free, man.
It's going to rain.
You know Mike's got the hookup.
All right, I just texted, how's the drive?
Don't text him. You're not supposed to text.
He's in the middle of nowhere. You're in the desert.
I know. So but now he's going to look down at his phone?
Eh, he's fine.
He's a grown man.
He was a cop.
Yeah,
remember?
He
was.
Yeah, he wrapped the car around a tree.
Well, I don't think he wants you to
That's why he's no longer a cop.
But he wasn't like a cop at the time.
He totaled the patrol car.
Yeah, that might be a fabrication.
Yeah, I mean.
Let's talk to Stunt Street.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone's senior writer, Brian Hyatt.
And here's Lil Yachty with Tierra Whack.
I've never been to a fashion show. I never did any Paris Fashion Week, New York Fashion Week, and I'll tell you why. Because I would always go to events, and people would say to me, oh, man, Yachty, man, I love your music, bro. And she'd be like, what song? At the time, I didn't love my music. I would feel like I'm in a room with all these artists, and they all respect each other, and I feel like no one respects me.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.